Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Brandon Chapman, second generation firefighter with 15 years of volunteer and career experience, a driver on 17 truck for the City of Pittsburgh Bureau of Fire, assistant fire chief for Stowe Township Volunteer Fire Department, and out-of-state member for West Lanham Company 28 in PG County. My conversation with Brandon was an absolute delight due to the fact of how humble and open he was when it comes to not knowing every aspect of the job, continuing to better himself through books, attending classes, conferences, and listening to the members before him. Brandon's mindset when it comes to being a firefighter and a chief officer is without a shadow of a doubt what I hope we all try to strive for, with the key takeaway being we can't forget where we came from, and just because you have rank doesn't mean you're better. With that, I present Mr. Brandon Chapman.
I'm Brandon Chapman. I'm from the City of Pittsburgh. I started off my fire service career in 2009 as a volunteer. I was pretty much born into the fire department. You could say my dad was a fireman for my whole life. So as a second generation, you know, I just grew up around the firehouse. Being a kid, I can remember like in the late 90s, early 2000s, staying the night at my grandparents' house on the weekend. And, you know, fires going out, my grandma waking me up and saying, "Hey, there's a fire. We're going to go." And my grandma would always stop on the way, get the guys, like, you know, it was the 90s. So everybody was smoking cigarettes. So we stopped, we grabbed some cigarettes and, you know, waters or whatever else it might be. And we'd go and we'd help them. Like my grandma, and I just remember, like, you know, sitting on the pump panel watching all these fires. So, I mean, I got really introduced to it at a really young age and been around it my whole life. I remember countless hours spent in the firehouse and whatnot. But then I'd say probably around, like, I don't know, started becoming a teenager, kind of lost interest a little bit. I really didn't go hang out. I was playing sports, you know, friends, whatever, whatnot. And then, unfortunately, my parents split up and I was living with my dad. And if you know about the volunteer firehouse, you know, on Tuesday nights or whatever night, your drill night, and it would be drill night and it'd be dinner after drill night. So, like, my dad's kind of like, you can stay home, but if you want to eat dinner, you're going to come to the firehouse. So I started going to the firehouse a little bit, and, you know, one thing led to another. And next thing you know, I'm wearing fire gear. I'm going to the academy on the weekends. I started when I was 14. So, like, a lot of people give me – I count those years, right? Because, like, at 14, I was at the academy on the weekends. I was taking in fires. And what I say to that is, like, guys drive to a ton of fires, and they're not inside doing things. They're in the support position. But, you know, they're still counting that as going to a fire. So I'm not trying to say, like, those 4 years are, like, I don't know, maybe – obviously I wasn't going into them and whatnot, but, you know, there's always something to be learned on the fire ground, you know, throwing ladders, water supply, helping out, you know. So I got exposed to it to a really young age, and I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful that I got into it. I started out EMS at 16 through a high school program, got my EMT. And then I like weaseled my way out of high school any way I could. I didn't want to be there, so I would work half day on an ambulance. So I'd go to school from like till noon, and then I'd go work on an ambulance from noon to 8 Monday through Friday. So I spent my whole high school career pretty much doing that. And then graduated high school, went down to South Carolina, Door County, got a job. Oh. Spent about a year down there. Super pumped. But I went down there thinking I knew more than I did. And I ate a slice of humble pie, which, and looking back on it, it sucked back, like, sucked then. But knowing what I know now, like, it was good for me. I learned a lot. Met a lot of great people. I still talk to a lot of those dudes from down that way. But ultimately, for financial reasons, I ended up moving home. I just couldn't support myself. I was an 18-year-old kid, fresh out of high school, you know, working. And back then, you know, it was hard to get a job. And the jobs that you did get didn't really pay well, you know. So I was, like, working my 2 days off on a 24-48 schedule on an ambulance, just trying to survive and, you know, calling my dad, "Hey, can you send me a few bucks or whatnot?" So I did that for, I don't know, about a year, and then I ended up moving back to Pittsburgh. Once I got back in Pittsburgh, I went to paramedic school. That was the end of the fire service. I mean, if you know, like, I don't know how long you've been on, but back 10 years ago, there wasn't jobs like there was today, right? Like, it was hard. Like, I tested for, I couldn't even tell you how many jobs, just trying to get hired anywhere I could. And I was like, it's kind of a sleazy way to do it, but I was like, I know if I'm a paramedic, I'll get a job somewhere. So went to med school, worked for a medic as a little bit, and then I ended up getting picked up in D.C. I was in DC for about a sip of coffee, really. So I took the test in DC and Pittsburgh around the same time. DC called me first, and I wasn't going to pass on a job for a job that I might get. So I'm in DC doing this process. And that was hard because to work for the city of Pittsburgh, you had to be a resident. So I had to live in Pittsburgh and work in DC, driving back and forth in recruit squad, come home every weekend and all. And then end up finally getting the call for my dream job, a place that I never thought I'd ever work. You know, we're a decent sized department, but we don't hire that often. And if you don't have military points, we're a traditional Northeast city where it's all civil service written. I don't have vet points. I don't have anything to give me that edge except for just reading and doing well on the test. I was fortunate enough to get hired off the first class on my list. And 6 years later now, I'm the truck driver at 17. And yeah, that's where I'm at.
Damn, man, that's crazy. Like, I was from up north to South Carolina to DC to Pittsburgh. It's just, I love hearing people's stories, and that's wild. That's wild. Let's see here. I'm definitely gonna ask this question because I don't know. So if you could tell the listeners a little bit about Pittsburgh, approximately how many stations, personnel, and things of that nature.
Yeah, I had to think about that. I thought about this a little bit beforehand, but we have 30 firehouses, 28 engine companies, 11 truck companies, two truck companies stand alone on their own. My company, and I got the stats too for 2022. We did about 2,500 runs, 17 engine. I'm saying my company because that's where I was. It was like 45 working fires, 10 of those were first due. So I'm not here to say, you know, we're going to fires every day, but enough to say we go to fires, I think.
Okay. All right. Is it a requirement to be a paramedic to get hired, or do you just have to have
Oh, in
EMT?
Pittsburgh? Oh, Pittsburgh. No, we don't do any. We do first responder. We don't have any. Pittsburgh Fire and EMS are completely separate. And it's actually unique because the city of Pittsburgh EMS does rescue. So we don't do rescue. We just do firefighting and we do first responders. We go on high priority calls like, you know, shooting, stabbings, overdoses, CPR, stuff
Right,
of that nature.
right.
And then occasionally we'll get put on like the less higher priority calls if they're the ambulance is coming from a far away or, you know, they'll ask for us to go and, you know, we go handle
Okay.
it.
Okay.
But
That was a question I was going to ask because I visited. So my sister has family that lives in Pennsylvania. I can't remember the county name or whatever. But we went to Pittsburgh and we were walking and I saw like a Pierce truck and I was like, oh, okay, cool. So I went in there and it was like a heavy rescue. And the guy was like, yeah, I'm a paramedic. And I'm like, oh, okay. I was like, are you fire? He's like, no. And I was like, so why does a paramedic company have like this big ass rescue truck? And he's like, well, we handle all rescues. I was like, for real? He was like, yeah. I was like, so MVAs, fire department doesn't go to? He's like, no. I'm like, pin ins, extrications. He's like, no, we do all that. And I'm like, that's wild.
yeah, I mean, so we
So,
do go on, then we get dispatched. And
okay.
typically we do arrive first. We'll start in, we'll start getting patient contact in it. You know, when I first got on, it was like, you know, you hear the stories from the old timers, oh, EMS, we don't get along, we don't go. I've never really personally had that interaction. You know, there's some bumps in the road for sure, but you know, everybody I've seen to get me on calls with, we work together well. But we get there, you know, if it's an extrication, we'll stretch a line from the engine, you know, stand by, we'll help them whatever they need. But my truck company is pretty unique because the city of Pittsburgh is contracted by a couple neighboring little municipalities to provide fire protection. And with that comes rescue. So my like second due area is one of those places. So that engine company has a complement of rescue tools, and my truck company has a complement of rescue tools on it, vehicle rescue, because we're like their backup.
Got
So
you.
it's kind of unique, but it's also kind of weird because I've been in situations where we're on the run. And there's somebody trapped, and we got the tools, and we're on this call, and we're not allowed to use them, you know.
That's interesting. So if it's in your first due in Pittsburgh, you guys cannot, even if like they just said, hey, your rescue truck's extended coming out from such and such.
Yeah, I mean, to not get into too much, it's all labor management agreements, really. There are officers. If it got to like an extreme circumstance, we would probably put the tools in service. And just kind of deal with that just to do what's right. You know, we don't push it. We're not trying to steal jobs. We're not trying to, you know, but it's, and it's like two places in the city. It's just unique that like where we have the ability to do that. So it's not just, that's not everywhere, you know. But yeah, it's definitely different. I tell people that they're like, but that's crazy. You know, and then recruits. So like, I teach recruit school, and they, we teach them all everything, tech rescue aspects. So they get rope, they get awareness, sorry, trench, like all the awareness levels, some of the ops level stuff. So they have an idea. Pretty much everybody has an idea of what's going on. Everybody gets vehicle rescue trained, a little bit of water rescue, trench, confined space, you know, pretty much the technical rescue disciplines. We have a lot of good guys on the job that are like heavily involved in like task force teams and stuff like that. So it's not like we don't have any rescue experience or knowledge. It's just, you know, the contract with the EMS says that they do it, and our contract says we don't do it. Just kind of how it plays
Fair
out.
enough. Fair enough. The only question I do have, so when it comes to the EMS side, on that truck, what's their personnel? Is it like two or three?
On the rescue truck? Yeah, it just depends. I don't really know the ins and outs of their staffing. I think it's set for three, but their minimum might be two. Because I've seen it show up with two and three guys. You know, it's EMS anywhere, right? Like, you know, they need people. There's medic units getting browned out, and you know, so if they could pull a guy off, and yeah, but
As far as the Pittsburgh Fire, what's your minimum staffing on your engines and your ladders?
four. Everything's four except our air unit that has two, and our fireboat has three, which is pretty unique spot because in the wintertime when the boat's out of the water, they act as like a squad company, and by squad, they're like in a pickup truck, and they just go to all the working fires. So when they're doing that, they meet the minimum staffing of four. So those dudes are, it's a pretty sweet job. You know, in the summer you're on the river, on the boat, and in the wintertime you're going to the fire. So you know, so it's four, but it's pretty much across the board, it's four.
All right, so I'm gonna fast forward a little bit. You get hired with your dream job, City of Pittsburgh. What was it like for during your first year?
Different. Coming from like a place in South Carolina, a place in DC, my expectations were a little bit different. They give you everything in the academy, and when you come out, you're pretty much, there's no like rookie checkoffs. There's no probationary manuals. It's just, you're it. You're like, you're one of the guys, you're working overtime. The only thing you can't do, so your probation is like a year. So like the academy's 33 weeks. So whatever the remainder of that year is like 4 months, something like that. You can't switch firehouses, and you can't drive, like take a driving job. So we do, really the only thing you do on that is like you have to get signed off by a battalion chief to be able to drive and pump. So your officer's taking you out, learning the streets. We're real big on, you know, knowing the streets and knowing your first due, but learn how to pump, and then you get signed off for that. And that's really all you got to focus on in like the first couple of months. So that's what I thought was different. Where like in previous places you come out, you got to relearn, not relearn it, but like prove that you know all of that. But I think it's just because our academy is so long, like it's 33 weeks. So you're getting it for 33 weeks, and they put enough faith in that. I have my own opinions on that. I think it's not a bad thing to have like some more things to get checked off, but I'm also not saying the way we do it is bad either, you know. I'm
Understood.
always about raising the bar, raising the standard, making everybody slightly a little bit better at a time. Instead of trying to make just giant leaps and bounds at once, you know, little things here and there. But it was definitely different in my first year. You know, just being back in Pittsburgh, having an idea how it run, and you know, that was good versus where I was in DC, and they're like, oh, give me an engine company's first due. And I'm like, I have no idea where that is. Like, not even a little bit, you know. So it was good to have understanding of the city, and you know.
For those that don't know you personally, you're also the assistant chief of Stowe Township. It's a volunteer department just outside of Pittsburgh. So this question is kind of for both roles, the truck driver, firefighter side of you, and also the assistant chief side. So what does the term aggressive mean to you?
Man. All right. So to me, I don't like the term. I don't like using the word aggressive, right? I truly believe in like by saying aggressive, you're setting a standard that it's okay to not be like there's aggressive and there's not aggressive, and that's okay. Like when you call a plumber or an electrician, you don't call an electrician that's aggressive. You don't, they're not saying, oh, I'm an aggressive electrician, I'm an aggressive plumber. They're just a good plumber or not a good plumber. And the way I look at that is the same way as the fire department. Like, you're either a good fire department or you're not a good fire department. And that's kind of harsh to say, but in my experience, like, the places that are going out saying, oh, minus a few, like, that are out there, like, oh, I'm aggressive, they're probably not. The dudes who I know that are aggressive, their actions speak for it, right? They just know. Dudes have seen them go to work. They see what their department does, and they're not ones out there over aggressive. They just know that they're firemen. They go in, they do what needs to be done. But to caveat that, like, I know what you mean when you're asking that question. It's like aggressiveness, and it's not just like running into a burning building, right? Like, it's being smart, it's having smart tactics, it's being good at your job, right? And a lot of that comes through training, experience, and just knowing when and when not to go, knowing when and when to not do something. And I always say, look for the guy on the fire ground that's not like running towards the front door. Look at the guy that's going to look at the rear or the side, or the guy that's putting a ladder to a window that's about to flash, because he knows, he's been there. You know, he doesn't get blindfolded by like just fire blowing out of one window. He's calm, cool, collected. And a guy I know, I don't want to butcher this quote, but he's from Baltimore City, and he says, salty gear doesn't make a salty fireman. Salty actions make a salty fireman. And I think that's great, because like, I've seen some guys with some real burned up stuff and who are walking around aggressive, and they're not aggressive, they're just dumb. They're just standing at the front door waiting for water melting their $1,500 leather helmet and bending their forks, right? Like, so I don't know. I think as a fire service as a whole, the term aggressive, we should just kind of get away from that, and just, you know, if the standard is aggressive, let's just make that the standard. And let's not just preach that, because it's not what you preach, it's what you tolerate, right? And let's just all be firemen and do our job, right? And that's.
Loud and clear, man. The message is heard. Okay, I love it. I love it. So with that being said, with you being the assistant chief, what are your department standards? You know what I mean? Like, I'm assuming, you know, you might get an influx of people coming through wanting to volunteer, wanting to be a member. What are the expectations that you tell them from day one when they walk in that door?
And talking about stove, first and foremost, I'm most proud of that out of anything in my fire service career, really. Like, if it wasn't for that place, I wouldn't be where I am today. Who knows what I'd be doing? So I owe everything to that place and the guys there and the guys that have come before me. But you know, to say we were always like, quote unquote, really aggressive guys, you know, going in, we were always putting the fires out and whatnot. And then I felt like we were dodging raindrops for a little while. And then we had an incident. Some guys got hurt, a porch collapsed, some guys got burned. And we went back, we reviewed the helmet cam footage, and we found a lot of deficiencies. And that's when we started to turn everything around. So we built, well, I'm going to say it again, even though I don't believe in it, but we built aggressiveness into our operating procedures, right? Everything we do is we default offensive, and we build it so everything's hurry up and go, not let's go. Everything's just default. We're gonna go, we're gonna go, we're gonna go. So if you come into Stowe as a new person, you don't even get on a fire truck for a little while. Everybody goes through a little rookie packet that we have. And again, we can't make it so hard that people don't want to volunteer, but you know, there is some sort of a standard that has to be met. So to get on the fire truck is a packet you have to complete. And everybody goes through it no matter what. And just to bring him up again, Alex Blood, I've known him my whole life. I've known where he's been. And he recently came to our department a few years back. And I made him go through the same thing that everyone else does. And, you know, and he was a good sport about it. He, you know, he went through it. And a lot of guys come in, and they are, like, even if we get a lot of people that come from different departments, and they are willing to go through it because they're like, wow, these dudes, they got it together. You know, they're making sure I know what I'm doing. So you pass your first packet, and then you're on probation for 6 months. And in that 6 months, there's another packet you have to complete by then. And it's really in depth, like knowing everything about the saws, knowing how much hose, how to pack it, how to pull it, where every little thing is. Plus, on top of that, there's survival skill station, frit skill stations, engine company, truck. Well, recently we got back in the truck company, but skill stations for everything that you have to be signed off on. And then while you're on that probationary period, you're not approved to ride the seat. So that's kind of the incentive for the guys to like hurry up and get it done. And if it takes you less than 6 months, we'll check you off before that. But that's the incentive. It's like, hey, you can ride the seat now. And it's like, again, it's just we build that in. It's always, if it's on reported on fire, it's on fire until the chief says it's not on fire. Meaning we're laying out, we're stretching, ladders are getting thrown, and all of the things are happening. And to see that all come together, it's great because it used to never be that way. And you notice the difference. And it was hard to get some buy-in on that. You know, a lot of the older guys were like, oh, why are we stretching a line for a report of fire? But I'd say the core group of guys at that place right now are 19 to 23. And I might be a little bit biased when I say that, but they're some of the best firemen I know. And I think that helps a lot because, you know, we're running over 100 reported fires a year. I'm not saying we're running 100, but reported fires that we're stretching on in these buildings. And it's even happened where we stretched on that building for a reported fire. And when we went back and it was actually on fire, that stretch was made perfect. So like these guys are, you know, they're not getting worked out and they're just going to these runs. And when it's on fire and there's fire blowing out the window, it's just another run to them. You know, and where if you're a department that isn't doing it all the time and you're not stretching all the time, now we're on the stretch and now we're on the fire and all of these things. And that's when things start to go bad, in my opinion. So, you know, we try to train out the excitement. Not saying don't love the job. But like, well, it's just another stretch. There's just fire this time, right? And we're just hammering that in every single time. And guys are like, well, you know, in the middle of the night when there's 3 feet of snow on the ground and someone said their toaster's sparking. All right. You know, they're probably not going to put a line on the ground for that, you know. But if it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Sunday and a fire alarm comes in, they might be stretching on laying out and doing all that on a fire alarm. You know, so we started off by that and then everybody just bought in and now it's just the standard and they just do it randomly. I love seeing it. I love pulling up in the buggy and there's hose on the street. I'm already getting reports of, hey, we got food on the stove. Hold us while we rack up, return the companies, you know, and it's just changed dramatically. And I think in our area, a lot of people have noticed that too. Our fires, you know, some guys on our mutual aid assignment, they're like, man, by the time we get here every time, there's nothing left for us to do, you know, and it's just being built in. And we don't go out and say we're aggressive. We don't say, those guys are not going to tell you they're aggressive. They're just going to tell you we're firemen. You know, our job is to go put the fire out, and that's what we do. So that's how that relates to Stowe, really. And I'm like super proud of that place. I'm super proud of all the guys like that are there. I'm humble that they let me be their assistant fire chief. Because really, I went from nothing to the assistant fire chief with the approval of all the guys. So I was a black hat riding the back driving and some things happened through attrition and they called my name. I've been at it for like 4 years, I think now.
It's awesome, man. It's awesome. What I really like about what at least what Stowe does, you know, that I'm sure there are many organizations, volunteer departments that are hurting for members, but the fact that, and I'm sure you know you guys might have the same issue too, of course, but what I really like is you don't just go, okay, oh, you want to volunteer? Cool, you're in. Here's your stuff, you're good to go. Like you make them go through. I don't know very many, at least where I am at down south. Many volunteer departments that will go, all right, here's your package you have to get done. You're on probation for extended period of time. You cannot, or like very few that I know, you know, that does that. So kudos to you for doing that because, you know, a lot of departments are hurting. So they just go, oh, you're willing? Cool. Here's your stuff. Maybe give them a little breakdown of what they got to do. This is what you do here for this situation. After that, you're good. But I like how you guys have that platform set up.
And when we started doing that, like, you know, I hate to say this, a lot of guys around the department, like, oh, we're going to deter people. We're going to deter people. But dude, I truly believe that culture is the number one recruitment tool. You know,
Absolutely.
I really do. I mean, we are getting guys from all over the place that are coming and hanging out or joining. You know, everybody's like, oh, can I come ride? My brother's texting me all the time. Hey, he's living there. And he's like, hey, can we have a ride along this weekend? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Like, whatever. I don't care. You know, a couple guys are like trying to skirt the system. They're like, oh, can we come ride every weekend? I'm like, nah, you can't come ride every weekend, but you can come check it out. And if you like it, you know, put the application in, become an associate member and do your part. You know, to the point where like, I appreciate your help, but if you want to be part of it, be part of it. And it's just an influx. You know, sometimes up until we just recently got a ladder truck back and it's not in service yet, but there's times on a Saturday or Sunday night when there's more dudes at the firehouse than seats on the rigs. And they're in pickup trucks just piling out, you know? And it's a great problem to have. And, you know,
Absolutely.
and everybody's like asking us how we doing. And I'm like, man, it wasn't always like this. And It's just got to create the buy-in, and you got to change. And people are starting to see, and like regionally, we started off like doing in Pennsylvania, every little town has their own little authority on the fire service, right? So it's whatever little fire chief wants to do and whatever they say goes. And we got a group of us together and like, man, we got to come up with some sort of a plan here. So the plan was like a standard operating guideline for multiple communities. It's called a joint operating guideline. And it's nothing like we invented. We didn't come up with it. We took the idea from a couple of places up north of us. I would say we're one of the places that use it as much as we do and as strict to it as we are. And it's just predetermined assignments. First do, second do, third do, fourth do engines, first do truck, second do truck. We let chiefs cross boundaries, right? So if I arrive in another person's town first, I'll run the command, or they arrive first, they'll run command, and we'll take a division or a group supervisor, whatever that might be. And it's really starting to catch on. Like recently, I just went and gave the presentation on how it works, how to implement it, and more people are buying in. And it's, I think Stowe and a couple of other mutual aid departments, we've created a change in the area and for the better. And it's just buy-in culture, and it's working. And all of that to tie back into your original thing. And again, it's just the quote unquote aggressiveness. It's just built into that and it allows them to do that. And we don't hold them back. The other day they had a fire. They showed up, they had fire throughout, like truly fire throughout, and they were defensive, but the guys got off stretch, we're ready to go in. And the chief had to say, whoa, time out. Let's knock it from the exterior first and then we'll go in. And 15 minutes later they transitioned, and like 25 minutes into the run, they had it under control. So it all works out in the long. You just have to believe in the change, and you have to buy into whatever you're trying to do. And I'm not trying to say what we're doing is the only right way to do it. I'm just saying it's one way to do it. And a lot of people get misconstrued with that and thinking like, oh, we're saying this is the only way, you have to do it our way. And that's just not true. It's just have some kind of a plan, and the proof's in the pudding.
Definitely, definitely. Okay. Love the way you put it together. Realistic training on a small budget. I'm not sure what Stowe's budget is, money-wise, but what do you do? What does your department do to try to bring realistic training for your members?
My best advice to that, man, is there's always a guy in the firehouse that's handy, like with something, right? So my dad's been a carpenter for 30 years. There's another guy that's a mechanic, another guy does this, another guy does that. And I'm the idea guy, but I'm not the guy that kind of like puts it together. I'm like, hey guys, I want to build this, for example, a window bar prop. Like, how do we enforce it conventionally and with rotary saws? And I had this idea, and a buddy knew a buddy who welded up a prop. Couple guys at the firehouse built like a freestanding thing for it to come together, and for $200-$300, we got a new prop. And it's just, don't stay stagnant. A lot of people get comfortable in their same drills, and it doesn't cost a lot of money to get good at training. You just have to be creative and branch out to whoever you're around, right? Like if everybody invests a little bit of money into it, or a little bit of effort into it, then you can all can use it. Another department by us, they And back tucked away in this industrial complex, there's this three-story, like type one building. It's all concrete, and they don't use it. It was an old cafeteria for a mill, and the guy was like, "Hey, do you mind if we use this for fire training?" And we actually hosted our grit first ever grit fire training class there. So we came in, we put some build outs, and and over the last couple of years, it's just evolved to almost like a training center. And it's, hey, there's a free couch there to throw in the search room. Hey, these guys are using pallets. We're building pallet walls. This guy works in construction, and they're re-outfitting the whole sprinkler system in the building. And he has a guy cut out a piece of a standpipe, puts it on a stand in the corner. So to me, just realistic training on a budget is just get creative. Use your resources around you. And the best to me is identify the deficiency and develop a plan to fix it. So if you guys have been lacking in truck work, let's start there. Let's just hammer down on some truck work for a little while and build it back up. Now, I'm not saying in there for 6 months, don't think about stretching a line, or don't think about cutting a car or whatever else you might do, but hammer down on whatever you think you're deficient in. You're only as good as your last run. So if you're the best engine company in the world and you went to your last fire and you sucked, that's as good as you are right now until you build back up to that, until you redeem yourself on the next run, or to you take the time to get those lines right or get the layout right or whatever that might be. But you can do it. There, believe me, I know all too well about it. Trying to run a training business, budgeting, pay the guys, keep the props. The best thing I And I didn't come up with it. You see it on the internet is the guys building the hose bed props out of scaffolding. That's the best idea in the world, man. You can take a couple of sheets of OSB, some 2x4s, and $200 set of scaffolding, and you got a mobile hose bed, right, for an engine company prop, and you put it wherever you want. So it can be done. Just I think that's a scapegoat. I think it's oh, it's too expensive. It's too expensive, and it's not really. You can There's resources wherever you are. You just have to look hard.
Okay, love it, love it. So how do you take, obviously you have a big love and passion for the job, so how do you take all that, and I don't want to say like bring it over, but how do you carry it to when you go into the work on how do you carry it when you go into the city of Pittsburgh?
It's hard. I'm not gonna, it's different, right? It truly is different. And again, I'll start by saying I love my job. I love everybody I work with. I think I work for the best fire department in the world. But I do think there's places where we could improve. Especially in like pride and culture and stuff like that. I think that's died down a little bit at some point in time. Because like looking at like we're kind of they all start off by like all the guys I work with have either worked somewhere or volunteered somewhere. So we got a crew of like dudes who are just like me, go-getters. We're out, yesterday morning I was throwing the stick up and I noticed the roof of the truck was dirty and we're up there for 2 hours scrubbing all the grease from the stick off the top of the truck. So as a crew, we have it and there's been some bumps in the roads. We get too overzealous sometimes trying to make change too fast or, and I recognize that after the fact, and I'm guilty. I make mistakes. I'm not perfect, and none of the dudes on my crew are perfect. We just care so much about it. We don't pay attention, and we just like see the end goal in sight. And the example of that is like we recently just we got a spare rig, right? The spare rig comes in, and the hose bed is an absolute wreck. So, the first shift we had it, and some things happened. We didn't get around to it, and it was like a shift. Maybe 2 shifts after we had it, we were like, all right, we gotta get this in check. So we spent all the afternoon on Memorial Day pulling all the lines off and repacking them, which is fine, no big deal. We made this thing parade ready, perfect fools, but in there we got a little overzealous and we made some small changes from how we typically pack the lines. And the ones we did off the rear weren't really a big deal because we got some newer hose and they don't really necessarily fit in the hose bed of the spare rig. So we just wrapped the nozzle in the middle to keep it from flipping up on top so it didn't fall off and, fling off and kill somebody. But the way we pack our crosslays in Pittsburgh is a little bit different than a traditional Minuteman. And we got a little carried away and we packed it like a double stack Minuteman. And, some guys were unhappy about it. And I see the point, right? Like I do. We just came in and we just made this change. And it was a little bit of like shift squabble, I guess you could say. But we squashed it. We put it back the way we did it. And I go back to like, what I always say is like, you're not going to just make a change by making drastic changes. It's little by little. And, sitting here out of the moment, like thinking about it, like I understand that now, but, hindsight's 2020, right?
And the fact, but the biggest takeaway for me is you all realized, hey, okay, I get it. We did kind of go a little bit much, and you owned up to it. It's the people that can't get to that point. They're just like, no, I'm right. I don't care what you say, I'm right. This is how it is. Those are the ones that you're like, all right, we get it. You love the job, but when you fuck up, just admit it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we're all humans. We're all gonna do things that we shouldn't have done. And I'm sure you guys did it, not trying to belittle the next crews, but you did it because it was just like a sense of pride. Like, hey, like we feel like this is how it needs to be. Granted, hindsight 2020, it should have, whatever the case may be. But I get it, man. But the fact that you realize it to me is the biggest takeaway, because we have a lot of good dudes, good men and women that can't get to that point where they need to see, hey, all right, it's yeah, I need to own it, but they won't.
Yeah, it gives guys like me, you, and kind of a bad rap if you don't own up to the mistakes, right? And again, right, Pittsburgh very traditional, like an old fire department, old Northeast fire department. That hose load's been working for how long, right? And it's gonna work when I pull it. I know what it is. I know how we do it. Maybe I don't agree with it, right? And I think there's a better way to do it. Maybe just approach we should approach it a little bit different. I don't know. Or I've come to a ways to adapt with that hose load, how I can deploy it and how I know, over time. And, maybe, we've talked like the start of that is just maybe passing that along. And then they see that. And then, and even starting with recruit school, like, so down there, we're teaching them a little bit different about a deployment, on how to deploy this hose load a little bit differently than what traditionally would have been done. And it's in the buy-ins, I think, is good so far. And again, like I said, I think I just got carried away. Not even is and I keep saying I, but I'm always the one who's like, I'll step up, I'll take the hit. I'm not afraid to admit when I'm wrong. I'm not afraid to admit when I mess up. I'm not perfect. But I think the guys on my shifts realize that too. I don't have a ton of time on the job, but I've been on, well, a new guy just came over to our shift, but I've been on the longest side of him prior to that. And so I kind of feel like it's my job almost responsibility to take the hit for those guys, even though I don't have like I have another year than those guys. And I'm not
Right.
trying to say I'm above them or above anybody else because I have a sip of coffee on the job, right? Like I ain't been here all that long. But I just feel like sometimes I'm the one that speaks up, takes the hit and rolls with it. But it was a group effort. We all took the blow. We all, but affecting change, and I think it's good what's happening at the training academy. And I'm thankful that the training academy staff gave me the opportunity to show a different way and let the recruits kind of sort it out. Like they learn the old way, they learn my way. And I'll say I do believe that they're picking my way over the older way a little bit more, just watching them drill and whatnot. But I'm thankful for the opportunity. And I think I did just like get a little carried away sometimes. So,
Okay. All right.
but translating it over and bring it back, it's hard. But I love the job. I'm passionate about it no matter where I am. It's just very two different roles. And sometimes
Right.
I forget that. Sometimes I go to work and I forget where I sit, and
Right.
I might put in a 2 cents where it's not warranted. And I recognize I eat it when I take it, and just move on. Learn lesson
Okay.
learned.
Okay. A quick question for you. Do so let's just bring up are ladders primarily ladders in Pittsburgh, or can they do both tasks?
Oh, we're straight truck. There's no hose
Straight
on it.
truck, no
Straight truck.
hose, no pump.
No, nope, just truck work.
Okay.
Now you're not gonna I'm not gonna say if you're a second truck or second truck's supposed to go to the rear, we might not get to the street. Pittsburgh has super tight streets, every house is on a hill, and you might not get close. So you might come up as an additional company and you might get tasked on a truck company with stretching the line. So I'm not gonna say you're not gonna do any engine work, but for the most part, it's showing up and doing truck work. We're very traditional in Northeast. We cut a lot of holes in roofs. So like it's my main priority as a truck driver is to be able to get there, obviously, and get the truck set up to go to the roof.
All right. Your engines now, do all the hose have to be set up, like laid down the same way, or can it be if, 'cause no two jurisdictions are the same. So can you have one engine that has their hose a certain way because of this, or does everything have to be uniformed?
Well, I'll tell you, everything is uniform. So no matter if you go to a downtown company, I don't work in the downtown area. I work in the, probably the worst neighborhood in the city on the outskirts as far as crime and whatnot and vacants and drug activity and whatnot. Who doesn't want to work there? But everything is the same. But there's nothing official, I don't believe, that says it has to be. It's just kind of how it happens. And back to the hose loads things, like we were talking about, like I kind of feel like that's a good point. Like, and we try to make that point, like, hey, we do things a little bit different out here. We have a little bit different of a setback. We have a little bit different of a layout. Maybe this load would work better here. And just trying to get that idea across. I don't really know how to approach it, but as far as I'm aware, there's nothing like there's no standard operating procedure that says like this is how we have to pack it. Or this is, I think it does say that, the city gives us and outfits the rigs for the length of the lines and the size of the lines. But as far as how it's put on there, I don't believe there's a official standard way to do it.
Okay. All right. And with your engines, does everything come off the rear, or do you have cross lays?
We have a front bumper line, two cross lays, and off the rear, and it just depends on the rig.
Gotcha.
We're kind of a mixed mash of rigs right now. Most of them are to the point where they're all pretty standard, but there are lines off the rear
Okay. All
as
right.
well.
All right. And just because I we're almost 40 minutes in, but I know you said that you're the only officer kind of on duty today, so I just in case if a boss comes out, I want to hit this question because you or this topic because you definitely wanted to hit on it. The grit fire training for Jimmy Ellis. Go.
I'm a founder instructor for Grit Fire Training. We started this back in like 2020, then COVID, like right around when COVID hit, and we realized like it wasn't really the best time to try to launch. We were doing some stuff low key. Once COVID settled down, we did a hard launch, social media and stuff like that. And our goal was never to be like on the circuit or, be out there teaching all the time all over the country. And it wasn't something that we'd like said we don't want to do, but our goal was to make a change locally. So I'm a fire academy instructor. I teach for the local community college. I do like the state suppression thing, which in Pennsylvania is like an extremely difficult process. And I see the deficiencies in it. Like a firefighter one, we teach you here's how to throw a ladder, here's how to stretch a line, here's how this, but we don't ever teach you how to like put it all together. We don't ever teach you like things a little bit different from the book. And I'm preaching with a lot of guys preach. So we were just getting asked to do a lot of training. And we're like, man, we're going out, we're doing this training. We have limited resources. We don't really have insurance. And to a certain extent, I'm not looking to get rich, but like everybody's time's worth something, right? So me and a couple other guys, we started Grit Fire Training, and we started doing classes locally, and it kind of just grew. Then like some manufacturers started reaching out to us. We're repping their products. We're brand ambassadors for a few different things. And one thing led to another. And I'm not gonna say we're like some, giant training company, but we're not small either. This past weekend we were just in Erie. We got picked up on a couple conferences, and we're doing some stuff. But again, it was to affect change locally and going around doing all the stuff I've done here. If Grit were to, shut down tomorrow, I think we have accomplished what our initial goal was to set out to be, was to make a change to the people we could. And I'm just thankful for what it's becoming or what it's grown into. And really looking forward to what the future brings for us. I think it'll be good. I think, yeah, I'm just, thankful for it, really. It's a lot of work. A lot of effort goes into it. I spend a lot of time, not just me, all the guys, we got guys from all over. Got a guy in Detroit. We got a guy like down in DC, Pittsburgh, a new guy from Richmond, South Carolina. Or we got some staff from all over bringing a little bit of different insight. And I think our approach to like the training company thing is a little bit different. We're not real mainstream. Like we're not like what's all over the internet with, the trendy fire service trainings. We're like, hey, we're all down in like we do what works for us, right? Like we sorry, I don't know what happened here.
I
Can
can
you
say,
hear
yeah,
me?
you're good. I can hear you. Perfect.
Oh, sorry. We go against the grain of a little bit, but this is where guys are coming from, where cities that do it this way and it works for them. And I think in the fire service as a whole, it's like if you're not doing what's mainstream, you're doing what's wrong, right? And I hate that because it's like I go places somewhere and I learn from like a little department in the middle of nowhere where you might not think you would ever learn something from. So that's where I think we're different. We're not out there, and when I say this is the best example I got. It's like me and the guys at Grit, we're not like super big into flowing and moving through pallets in a parking lot. We don't think it's practical. And I'm not saying there's not guys out there that don't do that or, doesn't work for them. But I think everybody thinks that they need to be able to, push a 2.5 through pallets in a parking lot. And it's just not the case. And, so we don't really focus on that. We focus on, like little things that, might not be the mainstream way, but it works. Guys are coming from credible places that do it that way. So just back into it.
And I like your approach to it because like I've seen a trend, and this is not a knock, and I want people to understand this is not a knock to any one group or individual that does it, but I noticed the trend of like, people want, and I don't know if it's because of just our time, society, social media, but everyone wants to have the likes. They want to have the massive following. And I mean, that's cool, but some people, like for me, for example, I don't look at it that way. If I can affect change with one person or get one person to hear the message, that's good enough for me. I don't need to have a huge number of subscribers and things of that nature to continue going. Like I've said this before and I'll say it again. whenever I have no more people to interview, this podcast is done. It'll be up for however long it's up for, until like a license expires or whatever. But I will not be out there scrambling, begging people to come on. Like I have a decent number of people I've been able to interview, and whenever it's done, it's done. I felt like I have maybe have done my thank you back to the fire service. So I love how you stated that with grit.
Yeah, and like I agree. It's the same thing, man. Like I think we've set out and we've accomplished locally what we want. We've affected a change. And you know, if it shut down tomorrow, I'd be upset. I'd be, you know, I'd be I'm not gonna be say I'd be happy about it, but I'd feel like it was success. Might give me a little bit more free time to go, you know, spend some time doing fireman stuff all the way. Like you know, spend some more time down in PG, down in Maryland, where I volunteer, and you know, wish I had more time to go down there, but you know, give me more time to go do that and you know, expand my fire service career to another direction, really, you know.
Definitely, definitely. You wanted to hit on the Jimmy Ellis found, or I don't want to call it
Yeah.
foundation, but that. So go ahead and spill that too.
So in August this summer, 16, 17, 18, I believe the dates are. I don't have them right in front of me, but the Jimmy Ellis Memorial Training Weekend here in Pittsburgh. It's like 2 hours north of Pittsburgh. Jimmy Ellis, or it's not 2 hours, it's like 45 minutes. I don't know what I was thinking. It's like 45 minutes north of Pittsburgh. Jimmy Ellis was a training captain, or a captain for the city of Pittsburgh, who was real big into training. My interaction with him was limited just because of how everything's happened and time going, but I've known his name around the area for a long time. Like, a well-known instructor, great guy. He unfortunately passed away a few years back, and they started a foundation in his memory, the Jimmy Ellis Foundation. And they're doing a training weekend as kind of a fundraiser for the foundation, and the purpose of that is to raise money to be able to send people to conferences and, you know, honor him through training, and you know, raise money to be able to send people to FDIC and whatnot. And he was a well-known guy. He was an FDIC instructor, so all the guys that are coming to this training weekend are pretty big guys. You know, they're on the circuit. They're out there at FDIC, and you know, seeing my name on the flyer with those guys is first of all humbling. But great fire training. We're doing a class there. It's called Side Charlie Engine Operations. It's you know, all the things we come in and operating is like what we consider the third due engine in the rear of a structure, and how like things are different back there. You know, how you get there, water supply, how you get a line back there, how you're deploying your line up there, entry to the building and all that. So we're going to cover all that in our course. But even if you're not interested in truck work or engine work, there's a ton of classes going on. There's some RIT, there's some truck stuff. There's a ton of stuff going on that weekend, and it's right in the backyard. If you're in Ohio, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, some parts of New York, it's pretty close. Some deals on the hotels, social events, basically like a pretty decent sized conference in our backyard here in Pittsburgh. And you know, I hope everybody takes advantage of that. And if you can't come, at least help us get the word out, and let's get it going so we can grow it and keep it going. And in his memory and for the sake of training, let's make it what it needs to be.
I agree. I mean, without training, what's the point of being a fireman, right? I mean, at least that's how I look at it. Like you have, we all want to play, but we have to train to be good to play. So
Who
I
doesn't want to
love
go to training all day and then hang out with their buddies at an event in the evening
it.
and meet guys from all over, right? That's
That's
like
right.
kind of a good part of it too, you know. I'm
Yeah,
not a
absolutely.
drinker, but you know, some people are.
Yeah, no, same here. I don't drink. I mean, I'll have a water with my little lemonade mix in it, but I'll hang out with you and we could talk shop. And I love hearing. I mean, there's nothing better than putting in the sweat equity and then at the end, all coming together, talking shop, talking about what we can improve on, what we did good, taking back the lessons learned, and then going around shooting the shit with some of the best firemen in the world. So I love what you guys are doing. That's awesome.
Yeah, and again, I'm just like super thankful that Greg got the opportunity to do that. I'm like super pumped about the weekend, and hope we get that registration up. It's doing good. By no means I'm not bad, but it could be a little bit better, and it's still kind of ways out. And I know it's summer and everybody's trying to figure out what they're doing, but if you sign up, you're not
Okay.
gonna regret signing up.
And where can they, what's the website like, plugging
It's
all that info?
so if you on social media, the Butler County Fire Chiefs page or the Jimmy Ellis Foundation, All that's on there, or just very simply go to the grit page and scroll. The links are all there. I share that stuff pretty regularly on there. You'll find it on the Grit Fire Training on Facebook. And on the social media aspect of that, Grit Fire Training, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook. We post a training tip every week. Something a little bit different, something a guy's learned along the way. And a lot of times it's just every week it's, hey, some guy ran into this week. Check it out. Let's share it. Let's see what everybody else thinks about it.
Okay. Love it. Love it. You heard it. You heard the man talk about it. So if you're in that area and you're looking for some good training for a really good cause, sign up. So that's awesome. That's awesome, man. Last topic, let's hit on leadership because this kind of fits you perfect. So what is your example of leadership, and who helped form that foundation? Like, you said your dad was a fireman, so of course, as a son, man, you're gonna look up to your dad on things, and try to take away things of that nature, and also the people that you work with. So, what does true leadership, whether it's company officer or chief officer, mean to you?
Oh, leadership, man. So I'm pretty uncomfortable with that, the word leadership, right? Because I'm in a role where I am a leader and I'm still learning, right? But I'm comfortable with being uncomfortable to say. So I know that I'm in a place where I'm bettering myself, but to me, it's first and foremost, my leadership style is to stick up for the men. The men are always first. I believe that above all, because without them, you're not shit. And we got to take care of the men. In regards to that, like a lot of the younger guys feel comfortable around me, and I go to bat with them for a lot of things. But being in this position when I was new, I was like, oh, it's whatever they want, it's whatever they want. But now, like a little bit of way into this position, I'm like, all right, guys, like I pretty much am siding with you on everything, but we gotta dial it back a little bit on this, or this isn't the battle we want to pick. I hear you, but this isn't really what we want to do. And then it's also just like leading from the front. I'm lead the from the front kind of guy. I'm not gonna ask anybody to do something that I wouldn't do. And I know that's kind of the cliche answer that everybody says, but back to the standards and relating to like relation leadership, I'm like tying it back to the volunteer firehouse. But every kind of standard or training that there is, me and the fire chief, who just so happens to be my dad, we do everything first, right? Like, so if there's survival training going on, we bail out the windows. We put the pack on with the guys. We do everything. When we did a driver's training program, because we noticed a lot of deficiencies, everybody in the department went through it, including him and myself. We set that tone of like, we're no better than you guys. We're just in the position that we have to make decisions and stuff, but we're gonna do it all with you. So we're gonna put our gear on. We're gonna go crawl around, the maze or whatever it might be, that training. But I'm the, me and the fire chief, we'll get on the back. We'll pack the lines. And sometimes it's very necessary because it's still, we don't let other people put hose on our wagon. It's, you can drag it over to us, but you're not touching it, putting it on. That's a pride thing. We want to make sure it's right.
Damn. Okay.
Yeah, you can drag it over to the tailboard. We appreciate your help, or you can just leave and we'll be okay packing a couple hundred feet of hose by ourselves at 2 in the morning, just because it's just pride. It's got to be right. It's got to look good. And we're big on that. But me and him will, after running command, we'll jump out and be up on the hose bed packing the lines with the guys, or coming in. And the live-ins, they have their own little individual duties, and sometimes, like, if I see one of them needs done, I might just go ahead and take it upon myself and do it. And I'm not trying to give credit or like take like look what I do. That's not my point of it. My point is, like, to me, that's the leader. The leader isn't the one who just says all these things need done. And I still feel like I'm one of the guys. And I think I have a good relationship with them because of that. But when I need to lead, I lead. They're always thankful for, like, when they hear me mark up on a box going out of town or something. Because if we go somewhere that doesn't have like a standard operating guideline, it's unfortunate to say, it's kind of like a free for all. And I'm always like scooting the dudes in the back door, just put them in a place to make a play. And so I build that rapport with them and they feel comfortable. And then, when it's time to go to the firehouse and something needs done, and I'm like, they've been slacking, I gotta like kick them in the ass a little bit, I don't get as much backlash, because I'm pretty cool about most things. And there's a downside of that, I think, to like being too easygoing. I just haven't had it happen yet. I think I might one day for some reason, just like reading leadership books, talking, you can't be their friend. People say, but I don't know. I don't think that's true. They're on my they're all my friends, you know, and I think it makes it a little bit more difficult because you don't want to hurt feelings, you know, like
Right.
my brother's living, and like sometimes I gotta lay the law down on him, like, you know, because he, you know, he made a stupid move, like melting a face piece off in a fire that he shouldn't have done, like being dumb, right? And I think that comes with time, and you know, age, he's young. But just explaining to him, like, you know, maybe that wasn't the smartest move, you know, and
Right.
that's just like one example. And I'm not trying to say he's bad or anything, or you just, you know, sometimes people make dumb mistakes and you have to get at him for it. And you know,
Yeah.
it's kind of hard to do. And I'm learning, like I truly am. I'm evolving, I'm learning, I'm trying to, you know, if I'm going to a class somewhere and there's someone speaking on leadership, I'm taking it. I'm reading the books about leadership. I'm trying to do the best that I can, but it's a very new position for me. And you know, and also just because I'm the assistant fire chief doesn't mean I won't ride on the back of back step still with the volunteer firehouse. If there's a chief going to mark up and the company officer and maybe even one of the younger guys just wants to ride the seat that day. And I think it's even better because like now I'm in the back. They have that safety net if something, you know, they're not sure on what decision to make or whatnot. But a lot of times they're smooth sailing and I'm, you know, running the line, you know. So, you know, I'll do whatever needs done. And I think that's a big part, especially in the volunteer fire service. But I'm hoping I learn a little bit more about leadership. At work there I have a chance to get promoted. I don't know, kind of right on the line. I did decent on the test.
Okay.
So for 2 years, there's a chance I might get made if I do. Hoping some of the stuff I learned from outside of there translates over.
Okay.
And I think just my motto is the men first will help me a lot if that is what's in my future. And if it's not in my future to get promoted at work right now, you know, I ultimately I'd like to one day. I'm cool driving the truck around the back step where I'm at now with the guys I'm with. But yeah, leadership's a tough one. It really is. It's so many styles, so many guys you listen to, so many things, and it's just a lot.
I get it. And I love your answer, man. It definitely shows you your humbleness. Like you said, you're in a position as assistant chief, but you're still always trying to learn more things. And I have no, there's nothing else I could say, you know, that's like, oh, that was a terrible answer, man. That's actually one of the best answers that I've heard. Cause just because you're a leader doesn't mean you stop learning. It means you need to learn more for your role, but you never forget that you're one of the guys. One thing that perked up my ears. So you're the assistant chief and your dad is the fire chief, correct?
Yes. Yep.
Father and son. How
Yeah.
is how's
It's
that
hard.
relationship?
It's hard. It truly is hard. So like I got a preface with this. We're not the firehouse that you know votes everybody in because they're your buddy, right?
Okay.
Let me start by saying that I'm not the assistant fire chief because my dad's the fire chief. That has nothing to do with it. There's standards that are put in, years of service, whatnot, and it is elected for the chief and the assistant fire chief, but you have to meet all the stuff first. They're on opposite years. And then from every other officer spot down is a written exam, right? Put together by the chief and the assistant chief,
Damn.
proctored by a chief from an outside agency, right? So
Damn.
we write the test. They, what's the word? I don't know what the word I'm looking for, but they read it over, they quality check it, they come in and they give it. We do give points for experience, we give points for training, things along those lines. And then it's a written test. So deputy chief, captain, and lieutenant is all a tested position. And it goes every 2 years, they're up. So when the assistant fire chief gets elected in the, like, whatever it is, December, January, February, the rest of the officers are up. So that we did it that way. So that there's not like a whole change of leadership in the department at once. But
Right.
the written test is put together by the chief and the assistant chief given. And even if you're currently a deputy chief, captain, lieutenant, you have to put in and test again, right? It doesn't matter how good of a
Wow.
job you are because it motivates you to keep learning and keep doing better. And again, like I said, you got to always, the standard is the standard, and that standard always has to keep going up little by little. And then you're always getting better, right? Don't make it a giant jump. Set the standard, live by that standard, right? Again, it's not what you preach, it's what you tolerate. And keep raising it and raising it and raising it. It's little by little, and people don't even notice that you're raising it. They just automatically meet up to it. So for those guys that have to compete every 2 years, they're out taking more classes. You know, they're paying attention a little bit more. They're putting a little bit more effort in, and it keeps them from getting stagnant. So that's how that falls into place. And when I became the assistant fire chief, I was appointed for a year by the fire chief because some attrition, some guys left, and the spot was
Mm-hmm.
open. But I told them, because I was a lieutenant for some time, and then I stepped away, and I was just a black hat. And when it came open, I told them, like a couple, like the deputy chief at the time, the fire chief was my dad. I was like, they're like, well, would you be interested? I'm like, yeah, but you have to make sure every other person is okay with me doing it first. Like, you have to sit them down, and if one of them is not okay with me doing it, going from something to nothing, or nothing to something, I said that backwards, I'm not doing it. I'm not gonna lose the respect of the guys. I'm honored and humbled to be in this position, but I'm not gonna do it unless everybody's okay with it. So they had a meeting, and it was like kind of, I wasn't in it, but from what my understanding, it was like unanimous that like I was the guy. And I've been in that spot 4 years now. And then my dad being the chief, it is a weird dynamic. We do a very good job at separating it. At the firehouse, he's chief and I'm the assistant chief. And if you know, we'll go at it. We'll scream and argue about things that we believe in. And I'm not advocating to scream and argue. That's not it.
Right.
But like, it happens, right? It does.
Right.
Disagreements happen. But when we leave there, we're back to father and son. And we
Okay.
never hold it against each other, whatever. And we might not talk about the fire department for a few days outside the firehouse, but you
Right.
know what I'm saying? Like, because it's still like,
Right.
but when we walk out of there, we're back to father and son. And it's always been that way. Even when I was a kid, like as a junior and newer guy, he was always in an officer position for as long as I've been in the fire service. He never stuck up for me, and which I'm appreciative of. Like, I never had the, my dad's a captain, my dad's the assistant chief syndrome, and because he never once would stick up for me. And even if there was something going on with any my other two brothers, it's like a full family thing. Both my brothers are volunteers there. But if anything happened with any of us, he was always like, he would separate himself from it and let the course of action take place by the other guys. Like, if we were getting yelled at, he wouldn't stick up for us, he wouldn't do anything. So, I know some places where the fire chief's kid will run rampant, and and my dad was like, absolutely not, that's not going to happen, you guys. And he's like, you make your bed, you're sleeping in it. So
Man, it's fucking
yeah,
beautiful. I love it.
felt
That's
it
awesome,
dry.
man.
But
That's
again, like I said, man, sometimes it's awkward. Like, we'll be screaming at each other, and it's like, hey, our thing is we go grab dinner. Like, we're at dinner, and like, we talk a lot about the fire department. So we're not talking about the fire department. We're like, what, what's this? What's that? It
right.
does. And then it fizzles out, and then we'll come to an agreement, and like, we move on from it,
Okay.
but it's not like anything comes to me. It's like, hey, can you go talk to him? Because you're your dad. The guy's never put me in that position.
Right.
And it works well. It works well.
Okay. Have you ever had a moment where one of your other brothers is like, fuck it, I'm gonna start some shit, and they go like to your dad, like, hey, like they bring up something that they know will trigger him to argue with you. Like, do you ever have them poke fun?
Oh,
Because I'm
yeah.
sure
My
they
younger
could
brother.
use
So,
that.
I'll give you the prime example. So, Cadet Lines, right? Like, we're one of the only staff firehouses around, and we're known as the Wagon Boys. It's on our engine and whatnot.
Okay.
But we're always trying to go to people's fires, and my dad reins all of us back in, because if it's me, if they're asking me to go to a fire, I'm like, I don't care where it is. Tell them you got staffing and you're on the way. And if they let you come, they let you come. So they know, and like, we kind of gave the guys free range for a little while to just mark up and say, hey, we're staffed, do you want us? And then they were getting kind of carried away. So my dad put it in, like, you have to get approval from one of the three chiefs before you can bid a run. So I'm the first guy they call, because they know that I'm more lenient. And I tread that line lightly, because again, like, I'm not trying to be, I'm like, where is it? What's your staffing? But also got to keep in mind who's around to cover in case
Right,
there's a run in
right.
our town. Like, you got two crews. What's the deal here? But a lot of times it's happened where my brother will text my dad, and he's just flat out like, no. And then he doesn't tell me, he texts my dad, and I'm like, yeah, sure, go ahead. And then my dad blows the gasket, and I'm like, well, I didn't know that they asked you, they came to me. So like, my
Right.
brother's definitely put us in that spot before, and nothing bad comes of it. He's just like, he's a young kid, and he lives at the firehouse, and he just wants to get a fire. So
Right.
I hear it. And like I said, I'm the type of guy, like, if I know you can make a difference there, I'm gonna let you go, right? Like,
Okay.
and the whole argument is around us is like, oh, that's super far away. Well, like, traditionally in Western PA, the whole, someone calls 911, the dispatch center hits your beepers, it blows the whistle, the whole nine, and you respond from home, get in the rig and go. We're one of the only few staff firehouses around, and we're staffed 95% of the time.
Okay.
So, if they're like slowly creeping on the dispatch or whatever, because it's like close by and they know it's on fire, I'll argue with anybody tooth and nail that like that's the best option for the public. We did it one time. We were starting to creep on a fire. Chief pulled on scene, fire showing. We would have been first arriving, and the chief's like, "No, you're good. Go. We don't want you." I would have been the first arriving rig.
Yeah,
And as we didn't go emerge into this run or anything, we just like kind of started driving. We didn't really get far outside of our first do, and as we turned around to come back, the units going to the fire were passing us.
that's and you know what, like there comes a point where, and it's crazy that it's 2024 and you still have situations where it's either a territorial thing or we don't want your help. Like it's wild because nowadays with the lack of volunteers anyway, why not? Like to me, there should be, when it comes to a fire, there should be no border. It doesn't matter what color truck, name on the truck, name on your turnout coat. The public doesn't give a shit. They just need help when they need help.
They just want a fire truck with some firemen on it.
That's it. To
We got a plethora
help
of
solve their
that.
problem. That's
If you're on
crazy.
fire,
But
we'll travel. If you're listening to this, get the Wagon Boys on the run, we'll come.
little plug for Stowe Township there, guys.
We've gone places before on like a special request, we'll call it. We get there and we get this like reputation that we're like assholes, but no one on the fire ground is gonna be super nice, like, "Hey, you're okay, And we went and the guys weren't making the push. And it's even on helmet cam video from the guys who are like, "Hey, just go and make the push, make the push, make the push." They're like, no, we can't, we can't. It's too hot." So they gave the line to our crew and they go in and they put the fire out. And then whatever, nothing happens on that the rest of that incident. We start hearing landing like, "Oh, they're never gonna let you come again because you didn't let any of their guys do the work." And we're like, they didn't want to do the work, but we're not gonna sit back and like not do it. So that's on them, and that's on those fire chiefs if they want to answer to that, if they ever had their day in court of like, this guy could have, these guys could have came and helped, why didn't you let them come? If they want to answer to that, that's on them. If they want to answer on not calling the closest department, that's on them. I know at the Stowe Fire Department, all of our run cards or so who we call from mutual aid is all done by distance and time. We have it documented who the closest departments are by time, distance. Staffing is factored into that, so one firehouse might be a little bit further away, like a mile further away, but we know they staff faster. There's all justifications for that. So if you want to be the fire chief that says, "Hey, don't come if you're already on the road and no one else is responding," if you want to answer that, that's up to you, but I'm not going to be that. And everybody gets mad, "Well, you don't want someone coming to your town." And I'm like, I hope someone beats us to a fire in our own town. Why? Because that's what's best for the community. That's what's best for the people who call 911 is whatever fire truck gets there first. And again, friendly competition, right? Like, I promise if you beat us once, you're not beating us again. Like, that's motivation for us to do better, and it's motivation for everybody. And everybody's like, competition's bad. And to an extent, yeah, where you're like getting dangerous and rolling rigs or but you gotta rein it in and do it safely. But to me, everybody's like, "You want one someone coming?" I'm like, "Yeah, come. If you're staffed and I hear I'm gonna let you come." The fire chief's the same way, the deputy chief's the same way. We're not going to turn down help, especially if you're already on the road and you got staffing. But
No, I dude,
some people don't want to hear
trust
that.
me, I get it. I personally get it. I 100% hear you loud and clear. Everything is all on common sense. I can tell you for me, our next closest station is Engine One. Engine One's usually the fire factory. They are the busiest engine company. But if I am behind the wheel and we get a possible fire, I am letting that truck eat. I'm doing it safely. My officer knows my capabilities. I am not trying to roll any rigs, hit anybody, but we're hammered down, and my goal is to try to be first in. It's
Yep.
just, it's healthy. Good competition is good. It's good for the fire service. It keeps you on your P's and Q's. So I totally understand 100% where you're coming from, pal.
Yeah, and if we get that rep, and I'm not gonna lie, do we boast a little bit if we beat you in your first two? Sure.
Yeah, it's
If you
just
did the
what
same
it's,
thing to us,
yeah,
we'll be
exactly.
good sports about it, but some people around us are just not good sports, man. They just don't like it. And sometimes it's realistic, like we're gonna be first. We're staffed. You're not. It is what it is, without getting too far deep into it, there's the town that touches us. They're never gonna beat us to a fire. Never. It's just not gonna happen. And it's just how it plays out, you know? And
Okay. Man, dude, I've loved this conversation. I love what you're doing with grit. I love your humbleness, your humility, the way you see things through the fire service, man. That's awesome. And I could say, I think you're like probably one of the first where you're a chief, but your dad's a chief as well. Like, I think that's the first time I've had a combination father-son type chief type interview. So this was great, man. I really appreciate what you're doing. Continue fighting the good fight, man. Pluto wasn't wrong when he mentioned you because he was like, "Hey, I got a guy for you." I was like, "Send it, bro." And he sends me you. So, Brandon, I want to say thank you, man, for coming on and talking shop, man. It was really a pleasure.
Yeah, just one thing, real, like you mentioned Pluto again. He's busting my balls all this past week. He's like, if you bring me up in the podcast, tell Danny I'm gonna need some royalties because it's like a couple I've come up with. He said, so if you start making it big, he needs royalties. But no, man, I'm glad we finally got to do this. Again, I'm humbled that I'm even on here, right? Like, who am I to like get on a podcast, right? That's crazy to me. But I appreciate you having me. I'm glad we got to talk shop. And yeah, thanks, man.
Yeah, no problem. Pluto, I'll think about the royalties, man. I gotta talk to my boss, who's the wife, and figure out how we can make that work. But bro, continue sending me people if you know them, man. I love it. Let's keep this thing going. Brandon, like I said, man, thank you. Thanks again, man. This was great. And man, you truly have a really good head on your shoulders, and I wish you luck with Pittsburgh on hopefully getting promoted, man, getting made.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.